This season, we've been diving deep into the cold case of Jennifer Harris. It's a story with more twists and turns than I ever could have imagined.
The more I thought about where her Jeep was, that was what changed things for me, because had her Jeep not been found at all, I would have thought she went somewhere, like on a road trip.
She was still carrying on this thing with Rob behind James' back, which I knew, but I couldn't tell James.
Am I considered a suspect at this point?
I thought, oh my gosh, did she think she was pregnant, or was she pregnant?
And I told her that if she wanted to have an abortion, I'd pay for an abortion.
The fact that Jennifer's uterus was missing, you know, that got a lot of attention.
And the thing is, about fire in the middle of nowhere, the opportunity presents itself to burn something more so than it would have in an urban place.
Before this podcast, I reported on Jennifer's case for CBS News as a development producer for an episode of 48 Hours called Murder on the Red River. Jennifer's story was one that stuck with me long after the cameras had turned off. On the 20th anniversary of Jennifer's murder this spring, I still had so many questions about the circumstances of her death and the complicated investigation that followed.
I know that you have invested yourself into her story.
Yeah.
I just think that you want just as badly as we do to have justice.
In the spring of 2022, I approached Fannin County Sheriff Mark Johnson about doing a podcast on Jennifer's case, and thankfully, he was open to it. I'm so grateful to everyone who has participated in my reporting, both on and off the record, and I believe we are closer than ever before to answers in Jennifer's case.
This whole county wants the same thing. Everybody wants to know why this case went on as long as it has, why that there's not been an arrest made. It's still a cold case, but it's not a done case.
I definitely don't want to give up as long as I can telling her story.
From Cold Case Productions, this is Final Days on Earth, Season 2, The Life and Death of Jennifer Harris, Episode 12, Justice for Jennifer. I'm your host, Claire Santama. Thanks for listening. In our last episode, investigator Daryl Parker took us through his timeline of the case, showing a minute-by-minute narrative of the path he believes Jennifer and her killer took.
The timeline gets her disappearance down to literally within 2 minutes.
Daryl's timeline offered an explanation for a lot of questions that people have in Jennifer's case, including the possible use of fire to destroy her clothes and purse, which have never been found.
Taking the effort to destroy this type of evidence takes time.
The fire on the Whitlock property was also in close proximity to a pair of Jeep keys consistent with Jennifer's, which were allegedly found by a neighbor and then lost before they could make it into the custody of the sheriff's department. But there's still yet another path we haven't taken in Jennifer's case, and it involves the type of gossip network you might expect in a small town.
Another aspect to this is Fannin County. And you really have to live there to understand what I'm talking about. But Fannin County has a robust gossip network. I've never seen anything like it.
Daryl Parker and just about all of Fannin County had caught wind of a rumor about a person very close to the investigation. A rumor that was all but gospel in Bonham. A rumor that was about to derail the investigation even more than it already had been.
I probably hadn't thought about that case since 48 hours, but if you've got questions, knock yourself out.
That's Miles Porter. He was the elected district attorney when Jennifer Harris went missing. And as improbable as it sounds, he ended up the subject of great speculation and grapevine gossip in Jennifer's murder.
Rumors in small towns, the only way they have legs, in my opinion, is if they involve
somebody that people know.
Back in May 2002, Miles Porter had been the DA for just over a year when all hell broke loose while he was out of town.
And we were all at a conference in San Antonio when we got a call that Jennifer Harris was missing, I think was the call. And that was big news. We had been gone for the week, and lo and behold, this blew up while we were gone.
When Miles got back to Bonham, he joined the investigative efforts already underway.
So everything was fluid. People were running around asking me for advice. And I told them to get the FBI to check out her vehicle. And that took some doing, but I think that happened. I had just been in the middle of a capital murder trial that I inherited from the previous district attorney, and we had had all kinds of problems with some of the local law enforcement not handling things correctly.
This capital murder trial will come back into play shortly, so keep it in mind. Meanwhile, Miles went about his duties in the DA's office while the sheriff's department and other law enforcement officers handled the day-to-day of Jennifer's case. About a year passed, and then there was a sudden burst of information, which came on the scene in a most unusual way.
One of my secretaries from the DA's office had gone to Walmart at lunch, and she said when she was in line at Walmart, she heard people saying that, did you hear that the district attorney had been arrested for the Jennifer Harris murder?
The outrageous rumor spread like wildfire.
Yeah, that was a little shocking, you know, when she gets back to the office. And then I started getting calls later that week from lawyers in other places, Dallas, Sherman, saying, we heard that you were locked yourself in the office, and there was a gun battle or something like that. There's a hostage situation at the DA's office. I mean, it just got nuts. It just kept getting crazier and crazier.
The rumors reached fever pitch when Fannin County residents started calling local TV stations, demanding to know why they weren't reporting on the arrest of the DA.
Everybody was convinced I'd been arrested. They wondered why it wasn't on TV. So they would call the local TV station saying, why aren't you covering this?
Wow.
They thought this was some massive cover-up from the media, that they weren't even covering this, because they all knew it just had to be true, right?
Those rumors have persisted to this day, so much so that even I have gotten comments from listeners of this podcast wondering why I wasn't mentioning the name Miles Porter in connection with Jennifer's death. Miles Porter is now an attorney in private practice. He has an office right on the town square in Bonham. He says throughout his career in Fannin County, there are people who have asked to be excluded as jurors on his cases because they think he killed Jennifer Harris. Here again is Daryl Parker.
Fannin County has a robust gossip network. I've never seen anything like it. Miles Porter, this is a perfect example. Somehow, someone in Fannin County spun this fanciful story that Miles Porter and Jennifer Harris were romantically linked and that Miles Porter had her killed because she was pregnant.
Daryl called that theory the most ridiculous thing in the world.
When you say it's the most ridiculous thing in the world, well, is it? Did you look at it? Did you investigate it? Yes, we did. There is no communication between Miles Porter and Jennifer Harris. No record at all.
Yes, Miles Porter and Jennifer Harris were both Bonham natives, but Daryl says that was the extent of their association.
Didn't know her on a personal basis. It's just a complete fabrication through, and it stuck to the wall. And ever since then, Miles Porter's career has been, you know, colored and darkened by this accusation that he had nothing to do with. There's no evidence whatsoever.
A lot of people wanted to believe it was true, I guess. It was a juicy rumor, and juicy rumors tend to have legs.
I'm sure you've thought about this a good deal.
Do you feel like you have any idea where this rumor could have started?
Yeah, I think it had something to do with the capital murder trial that I had tried earlier in my tenure as DA. That the guy that was the defendant had a bunch of friends, and they didn't like the fact that I tried him for capital murder. They just started this rumor to try to get back at me. That's kind of the way that I ran it down anyway. It's, to go into that is a long and involved, confusing story, but that's kind of what triggered this rumor.
It seems like it had a lasting effect on your nascent district attorney career.
Yeah, it didn't help my political career. You know, when people thought that I killed somebody, and I mean, I can understand that if they really thought that, they wouldn't vote for me. But rumors die hard in small towns.
Daryl Parker thinks there's an especially malicious nature to the rumor.
What is the motive? Why accuse Miles Porter? Well, because he was the district attorney in Fannin County.
Suffice it to say, if you're looking to slow down the wheels of justice, taking a shot at the top prosecutor in town is a pretty effective way to do it. And when evidence appeared to go missing in the case, it fueled the rumor mill that someone on the county payroll must have been complicit. For example, we've already discussed the mystery of the Jeep keys, but now let's circle back to Jennifer's laptop. It was one of the items collected early on by Fannin County investigators. It was then turned over to the FBI for expert examination. They uncovered some notable information. Fannin County investigators put it this way in a note about Jennifer's laptop. Talk to the Dallas FBI Computer Forensics Lab. Nothing valuable, except on May 17, 2002, there were 16,841 files deleted from the victim's computer. In a case full of shocking statements, this one is right up there. There is no evidence of any sort of follow-up to determine what files were deleted, who deleted them, or why. So let's break it down. On May 12th, Jennifer went missing. On May 14th, friends and family began gathering nightly at Grandma Mimi's house. On May 15th, investigators searched Grandma Mimi's house and collected Jennifer's personal effects. The report mentions a few items by name, including a day runner and a pair of underwear, but there doesn't appear to be an inventory of everything that was removed from the house, and I don't see a specific reference to a laptop. On May 17th, a large cache of files was deleted from Jennifer's laptop. But remember, this information would not come to light until the FBI got involved. On May 20th, the Fannin County Offense Report states that Jennifer's laptop was received. It's unclear who had prior possession of the laptop or where it came from. On June 11th, the Fannin County Sheriff's Office handed Jennifer's laptop over to the Dallas FBI to be analyzed. And then the FBI found evidence that thousands of files had been deleted 5 days after Jennifer's disappearance. Former investigator Daryl Parker.
There were a lot of problems with the investigation on this case.
Any murder victim's computer would be an item of interest for investigators, but Daryl has reason to believe it could be especially significant in Jennifer's case. Daryl says it's understood that Jennifer kept a diary on her laptop, the contents of which have never been entered into the case file. Considering the lack of physical evidence like DNA or a murder weapon, more circumstantial evidence in Jennifer's case is always welcomed. And hearing from Jennifer herself in a voice beyond the grave could be especially helpful.
She kept a diary in her laptop that was taken for evidence, and it just disappeared.
As if the evidence chain on Jennifer's laptop couldn't get any more convoluted, it somehow disappeared into thin air after the FBI returned it to the sheriff's office.
This is a story that was relayed to me by Mr. Harris.
Okay.
That the investigator, Mike McClellan, asked the family if he could keep Jennifer's laptop to do police work on. They're a small agency. We don't have resources. I'm wondering if you'd be willing to donate this so I can do police work. It's the most bizarre thing I've ever heard. What investigator, police investigator, would ever do that? And Jerry told me that his response was, no, that's evidence, and we'd like it back. And he said, oh, okay, well, I'll make sure you get it back. And then it just disappeared.
Yeah, that's completely bizarre. I remember hearing that as well. But yeah, I hadn't realized that at least we don't know if the contents of her laptop were ever examined, and this diary, if there's a copy of it that exists somewhere. I've never seen it. It sounds like you haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it.
Interesting. You never know whenever someone has kept a diary, what sorts of details they might have put in there that could be relevant to the investigation. It could be new evidence in the case.
Daryl attempted to track down Jennifer's laptop through Lieutenant Mike McClellan back in 2009, but McClellan had already left the Fannin County Sheriff's Department.
He ended up somewhere in Washington State, and he started doing investigations for a law enforcement agency out there, and I called them, and they said that he showed up with his own personal laptop. And so when I found him in Missouri, and I went and interviewed him in Missouri, he said, no, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never had a laptop.
Mike McClellan died in 2010, but could some trace of Jennifer's laptop still exist? Since the Dallas FBI Computer Forensics Lab examined the laptop, you have to wonder if they made a copy of her hard drive that they still have in their possession today. Claire Sanema here, host of Final Days on Earth. Have you ever thought about how much pollution traditional gas-powered lawn equipment emits? It's around 2.5 tons of greenhouse gas emissions per year. Oso Electric Equipment has the solution. The next generation 21-inch commercial electric lawnmower with a 2-hour runtime per battery designed for the professional landscaper. As the world changes, so should your technology. Electric technology brings value to your business, your customers, and your world. Not only is this clean technology environmentally friendly, it adds an unbeatable return on investment compared to gas-powered mowers, all while operating with increased power and durability. Oso Electric knows that reliability is key to smoothly operating a lawn care business. That's why they included features that are safe and easy to use for your employees. With a durable and reliable product at hand and backed by a no-downtime guarantee, you can confidently assure your customers that Oso Electric is the right choice for them. Have your landscapers gone electric? Tell them to learn more and request a demo today at osoelectric.com. That's osoelectric.com. Electrify your world with Oso Electric. Jennifer Harris's family has been searching for answers in her case since the day she disappeared.
It was frustrating because it seemed like a lot of our family, myself, my dad, were trying to kind of investigate as much as we could as well. I remember just asking constantly, have they found anything else? What about her purse? What about her clothes? You know, what about her car keys? Anything? And it was just bizarre to me that nothing was really found.
Prior to Daryl Parker joining the Fannin County Sheriff's Office in 2009, no one in law enforcement appeared to be aware of the fire on the Whitlock property that burned on May 12, 2002, the same night that Jennifer vanished. Back then, Jennifer's dad, Jerry, spent a lot of time walking around the area where his daughter disappeared from, hunting for clues. In the spring of 2003, Jerry and a friend were doing another pass along the water when they discovered a pile of women's clothes. It was a bra, a shirt, and a pair of shorts. It had been almost a year, but they wondered if they could possibly be Jennifer's missing clothes. So they alerted the sheriff's office.
My dad thought that they were hers, and then they were placed in a box somewhere and placed in storage or something.
According to the Harris family, when they later inquired about the clothes being tested for DNA, they got another disappointment.
They brought them out, and they weren't even her clothes. They were completely different clothes.
This is yet another example of questionable evidence handling by investigators. And to add insult to injury, boxes of evidence in Jennifer's case were later damaged by a water leak in a storage pod at the Fannin County Sheriff's Office. This is the current sheriff, Mark Johnson.
It's kind of sad, you know, that something so critical would be treated so not so good. Or sometimes we'll just go in the back room and cry a little bit about how bad things are, but it is what it is.
As upsetting as the mishandling of potential evidence in a murder investigation is, Daryl Parker doesn't believe those clothes have anything to do with Jennifer's case.
The clothing that she was described as wearing by Christy Farr is not the same clothing that was described as being found by Jerry Harris. So a lot of that is wishful thinking.
In light of what Daryl Parker discovered about the fire at the Whitlock property on the night Jennifer went missing, Alyssa now believes that her sister's clothes and purse went up in flames.
I do believe that deep down in my heart, I think there really wasn't ever anything to be found.
Early on in the investigation, the Harris family took an additional step to aid law enforcement's efforts in finding Jennifer's killer. On June 4, 2002, they announced a $10,000 reward for information leading to an arrest and conviction for Jennifer's murder.
I think it was pretty much when we had it sort of exhausted a chance to have an arrest right away.
In addition to posting a reward, the Harris family has also been developing a documentary series about Jennifer's life and death. Alyssa's husband, Barry Wernick, is an experienced filmmaker. They got married in 2010.
It was always something that that Alyssa was very open about, that she had a sister who had been murdered.
Around the 10-year anniversary of Jennifer's death, Alyssa and Barry attended an event at Bottom High School where a tree was planted in Jennifer's memory. It was then that the couple began talking about what it might look like to create a documentary together.
That memorial sort of, well, pushed us in a direction in having some legacy for Jennifer, telling her story and making her story, her life, known to as many people as possible.
The project eventually took on a life of its own and grew from a one-off biographical documentary to a true crime investigative docu-series.
We're just going to interview, and one interview led to another interview.
The filmmakers also got involved in the fundraising efforts for the reward for information, pushing the total to $100,000 over the years. While the docu-series is still in production, the Harris family hopes the six-figure reward could provide enough motivation for someone who knows something to finally come forward.
I don't know how anyone would be able to live with that sort of weight on their back.
The groundswell of local support has done a lot to raise awareness about Jennifer's case, and includes a Facebook group called Justice for Jennifer Harris, with over 5,000 members. In 2015, the Fannin County-based group Writing for Justice took up Jennifer's cold case as one of their main causes. The Cowboys' battle cry was justice for Jennifer.
It was a whole campaign from a local group riding for justice, and they were going on rides down from all the way from Bonham down to the state capitol, wanting something to be done.
Barry's documentary crew filmed it all, including when the incumbent Fannin County Sheriff, Donnie Foster, faced a challenger in the 2016 election. Mark Johnson, a career law enforcement officer, ran on a platform largely based on reinvestigating the Jennifer Harris case and allowing fresh eyes to take a look at the files and assist the sheriff's office. Johnson became a fixture at Riding for Justice events, especially those focused on Jennifer's case.
I learned a lot about this case just from running for sheriff.
Barry and his crew worked closely with Johnson and were on hand the night he was elected. Now, more than 5 years later, Sheriff Johnson hasn't given up hope in closing the case.
I think we're on the right track, and I would love nothing more to be able to get that one piece of evidence that says, okay, we got you, Lynn. And I would love to do that. For Jerry Harris, for Jennifer, 900% for Jennifer, because she deserves justice out of all this.
Barry interviewed dozens of people for his documentary, but some of the most interesting conversations he and Alyssa had weren't on camera, including hours of phone calls with Jennifer's ex-boyfriend, James Hamilton.
Alyssa reached out to him because she wanted to ask questions, and we wanted to, for our docuseries, speak to people, and you know, we wanted to know what he was up to.
James told them he had moved away from Texas and was living on a military base on the West Coast.
He's very private.
In the 20 years since Jennifer's murder, questions have lingered about James Hamilton's possible involvement. We've covered a lot of the circumstantial evidence against James in previous episodes. The fact that he admitted to having violent altercations with Jennifer in the past, the history of financial troubles with their jointly owned business, and of course, the fact that throughout their relationship, Jennifer was cheating on James with her ex-husband Rob Holman, who she believed to be the father of her unborn child. But there are other suspicious behaviors that investigators recorded in official reports on Jennifer's case. Details and statements from James's ex-wife that are disturbing, if not possibly incriminating. In the Texas Rangers report on Jennifer's case, there are multiple interviews with Cindy Fields, James Hamilton's common law ex-wife and the mother of his two children. In one interview, Cindy alleged that James had choked her in the past, and that she believed he was capable of killing someone with his bare hands. According to the report, Cindy went on to recount a story from 1999 when she was walking alongside the Red River with James Hamilton. Cindy said she remembered James telling her, quote, "This would be the perfect place to throw a person in the river." Cindy also told Texas Ranger Creighton McGee that she remembered James calling her in May 2002 to tell her about Jennifer's death. Cindy said she recalled James inquiring about whether or not the police or the FBI had contacted her in connection with the investigation. The day after speaking with Cindy, Ranger McGee interviewed James Hamilton. In his report, the ranger noted an interesting detail that James brought up at the start of their interview. Unsolicited, James Hamilton stated during the original investigation it had been implied due to his education and military training, he is smart enough to outfox the investigation and defeat a polygraph examination. James Hamilton did not respond to my request to be interviewed for this podcast, but he has always made himself available to law enforcement in Jennifer's case, submitting to multiple interviews and passing polygraph examinations. James maintains his innocence in Jennifer's disappearance and death and has never been charged in connection with her case. In the Texas Rangers report, It notes that Ranger McGee asked James why he should be ruled out as a suspect, and James replied, "I did not do it, period. I'm not a killer. I would not kill somebody. I loved Jennifer. I wouldn't hurt her. And why would I destroy something I cared so much about?" Jennifer's sister Alyssa has overcome her initial suspicion of James Hamilton.
At that time, immediately my thought was, it's the guy who was in business with her that, you know, when she left, he flipped out on her or something. And so I just thought, if anyone had ill will against her, that it might be him.
After speaking to James at length over the years, Jennifer's sister Alyssa no longer believes he had anything to do with Jennifer's death.
He did come to Bonham, and he did want to search, and he did take a lie detector test, and he did cooperate. He just would go in and be interviewed and do whatever.
Alyssa's husband, Barry, put it this way.
There are a lot of bad people in the world, and maybe he is a bad person, you know? But just because you're a bad person doesn't mean you murdered someone.
Investigator Daryl Parker has spent years uncovering circumstantial evidence about how Jennifer's life ended, and he thinks it's compelling enough to warrant further action.
So my theory is that Jennifer Harris had made an appointment to meet someone that she knew at the hoedown at approximately 8 p.m., and that's where she went to meet this person. She met the person, and they drove off together in that person's vehicle. They drove via the back roads to get to the Whitlock property right next to the Red River. They got into a violent argument, and she was incapacitated. And from that point, I think the person who killed her stripped her body and placed her in the river and then took her clothing and her personal effects and put them in this cabin and set the cabin on fire to destroy the evidence.
Despite everything that was known about Jennifer's relationships at the time of her murder, it took 15 years before authorities went on the record and named names. Shortly after Mark Johnson became the Fannin County Sheriff in 2017, he did the honors himself in the local media.
Yeah, and if anything, I think naming James Hamilton as a suspect is far more problematic than naming Rob Holman. He has an alibi confirmed by the witness who came in and interviewed with the sheriff's investigators. There are no eyewitnesses that place him with Jennifer. There's no communication between he and Jennifer that anyone can prove in those days leading up to her death. So to me, that would be a lot more problematic naming him as a suspect than Rob Holman.
While there are plenty of Texas cops who believe in the old-school method of policing, throw everyone in jail and let the Lord sort out the guilty from the innocent, Daryl Parker doesn't subscribe to that philosophy.
I do criminal defense work all the time. I'm not advocating for prosecuting someone who is, actually innocent of a crime or anything like that.
For Daryl Parker, there's only one person of interest left in Jennifer's murder, and try as he may, he just can't rule him out.
You know, there are a lot of red flags that happen after something like this, and to an investigator, you know, you have to watch for all the red flags, but you don't really know what they mean until you can start connecting the dots.
After years of investigating, Daryl believes he's put together enough pieces of the puzzle to see a picture forming.
Rob Holman, under questioning by sheriff's investigators, described the exact same scenario that happened that night. Jennifer would park her car, she'd lock it up, she'd take her purse and her keys and get in his truck, and then they would go driving around. Rob also made some statements during the period between when Jennifer was missing and when they found her body that indicate criminal knowledge of what happened.
What are those statements?
I think she was missing for a day and a half. when Rob Holman was interviewed by the sheriff's investigators. And one of the first things he said was, you know, well, yeah, I'm scared because I don't have an alibi. So she's just missing. We don't know where she's at. And the first thing he's thinking of is, I need an alibi, which is an indicator that he knows something has happened to Jennifer. The other thing that he did was when the investigators confronted him about Jennifer's pregnancy, when they asked him about the baby, his response was, baby, what baby? You know, he was worried about not having an alibi. And then when they asked him about this pregnancy, he tries to play it off like he doesn't know about it. But then he realizes that they already know. And so he says, yeah, well, she told me, but I didn't believe her. He says he didn't believe her, but he offered to pay for an abortion. Jennifer was applying pressure to Rob, saying that this was his child and that she wanted to reconcile. And she knew that he was involved with Sarah Beth Ruffner. He didn't care. She thought they should be together. And she was going to tell Sarah Beth Ruffner that she and Rob had been continuing to have intimate relations even after they were divorced. Well, when someone disappears, that's kind of the first thing you have to look at. Who would benefit from their disappearance?
It's important to note that Rob Holman has always maintained his innocence and denied meeting up with Jennifer in person on May 12th or having anything to do with her death. He spoke to investigators and allowed them to search his truck and his girlfriend Sarah Beth's house, where he was living at the time. Rob has never been charged in connection with Jennifer's case. He declined my request to be interviewed for this podcast. Today, Rob works as a trauma and crisis counselor, and so does his wife of nearly 20 years, Sarah Beth. Yes, the same Sarah Beth. Rob's professional bio states that he can bring a sense of calm to the most challenging situation.
In the totality of the circumstances, when you start looking at all this behavior, the relationship had gotten bad towards the end.
Daryl also pointed back to the phone call between Jennifer and Rob on Mother's Day, the same day Jennifer disappeared.
You know, they had a pretty lengthy, significant conversation that morning where Rob Holman himself said she wanted him to come spend time with her. And just by coincidence, that evening, she goes to meet somebody at the hoedown where they had a history of meeting before, left her vehicle exactly as Rob Holman described her leaving it before, went with someone she knew, and was never seen again. When Jennifer was at Christy Farr's house, she didn't seem depressed or sad or mention anything like that to Christy Farr. I think that's because she did have an appointment to meet someone, and I think that person was Rob Holman. This is an entirely circumstantial case, but circumstantial evidence is evidence. It's just that it doesn't have as much weight as direct evidence or forensic evidence. So what you have to do is you have to pile the circumstantial evidence on top of each other to create the proof, the evidence that you need.
I was struck by the fact that in the early days of this investigation with the Fannin County Sheriff's Department and the Bonham Police, you know, they were telling witnesses, we're going to solve this case. We don't have any unsolved missing person cases or murders in our county. And they were really proud of that fact. But unfortunately, the Jennifer Harris case remains unsolved.
You know, that's what frustrates me beyond belief is that, what is the sheriff's office afraid of? What is their hesitation? What are they afraid of in identifying a suspect and forwarding the case to the prosecutor's office to put in front of a grand jury? But for some reason, sheriff after sheriff after sheriff has declined to forward the case.
Current Fannin County Sheriff Mark Johnson.
And I'll just make it as simple as I can. Lack of evidence. It's still a cold case, but it's not a done case. It's going to stay here. It's going to stay open until something new comes along, and it will. I think one day it will pop up. But today, we ain't got it.
Daryl Parker disagrees.
I think in this case absolutely could go to trial if there was a prosecutor that was willing to send it in front of a grand jury. You know, if they send it in front of the grand jury and the grand jury puts the thumbs down and says, no, don't prosecute this, well, then fine. It doesn't move forward and the prosecutor is, you know, covered. But if they say yes, then what's the problem? Charge him and try him in front of a jury of his peers and see what they say.
Former Fannin County District Attorney Miles Porter.
I'm sure it's not lost on you that it's the 20th anniversary of Jennifer's case. What would you like to see happen in Jennifer's case?
It would be great if they could come up with some way to link the killer to the crime. I would love for it to be solved. I've wished for that for a long time. Well, we've had, gosh, three or four sheriffs since she was murdered, and you know, it seems like everyone decides to reopen the case and bring in new eyes to look at it and those sorts of things. And that hasn't resulted in a case being brought to a grand jury yet, so.
For Jennifer's family, each passing day where the case goes unsolved is painful.
My dad, before his health began to decline, he did a lot of grassroots efforts to make Jennifer and her case aware to everyone, especially in Fannin County. There were times when they would meet at the courthouse and interview him, or just have vigils and big posters of Jennifer just lined up around the courthouse, just so that it was pretty much in your face that, you know, this has still been unsolved, or no justice has been done for this. And also to kind of put it in the sheriff's face, you know, that you're going to have to drive by this every day, and maybe it'll spark a fire under you or something. Her life shouldn't just be for nothing. She had a lot of promise, and she had a family, and she had friends, and these things she'll never have again.
Thank you so much for listening to my second season of Final Days on Earth, The Life and Death of Jennifer Harris. Even though the season is over, my reporting isn't finished. I won't stop searching for answers in Jennifer's case until justice is served. If you have any information or questions for me, please get in touch through my website, finaldaysonearth.com. I'll be back on the air when there's new information in the investigation on what happened to Jennifer Harris and who is responsible for her death. If you want to help support this podcast, please rate and review on Apple, Spotify, Good Pods, or your favorite podcast player. You can also tell a friend about Final Days on Earth or share a link to the show on social media. Thank you so much. If you have any information about the unsolved murder of Jennifer Harris, contact the Fannin County Sheriff's Department at 903-583-2143. Final Days on Earth is recorded in Dallas, Texas for Cold Case Productions in partnership with Podcast One. Each episode was written and reported by me, Claire Santamaw, and Hillary Wadsworth. Audio production by Matthew Malinger of Podcast One. Original theme music composed and performed by Riley Simmons. Associate producer is April Scales. Field producer is Molly McEwen. Editorial consultant is Lucy Scott of lucymedia.com. Executive producers are Sharon Richards and me, Claire Santamal. Special thanks to Alyssa Harris-Wernick, Barry Wernick, Daryl Parker, Bannon County Sheriff Mark Johnson, attorney Miles Porter, and criminologist Dr. Claire Ferguson for participating in Season 2. If you have a case you think I should cover in my next season, you can send me a message on my website, finaldaysonearth.com.